Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 138th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Matt Enloe.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have a couple fun segments. We are revisiting Jemai Yusuf, who is a film student at USC Film School. She's getting her master's degree there in film. We're going to catch up with her on how her short films are going, and we are constantly trying to answer that question, which we, I think, literally talked about in the first episode, of is it worth going to film school or not?
Yes.
And I think she gives a pretty satisfying answer.
We're getting a real-time response and experience from Jemai in the trenches in film school. We're learning what she learned, what she likes, what she doesn't like. She likes most of it.
yeah.
She's a pretty positive person. She's having a great time. So live vicariously through Jemai Yusuf, who's going to, I would say, the very best film school of all time.
USC. It's definitely in the top 20. In California. And after Jemai, we're going to talk to Steve Vitolo. He is a writer and also an app developer. He wrote an app called Scriptation.
Steve is really insightful. He's really smart. And he has a great story about how he started out at the very bottom entry level as a PA, worked his way up as a writer's assistant and a script coordinator, and then became a full-fledged writer. And how all of that experience has informed the whole process of creating Scriptation. So it's a great story if you're interested in the other sides of filmmaking and the kind of the other ways that your creativity can blossom, and also the inner workings of TV and how that can kind of inform your creativity in surprising ways.
Yeah, for sure. He's been in pretty much every comedy room you can think of. He wrote the season finale of Black-ish that just aired a few months ago. And so, yeah, he definitely will give you the insight of the writer's track into Hollywood. Before we start talking to Jemai, I just want to remind everyone we got a Patreon. It's patreon.com/justshootitpod. It is a way that if you really like this show, feel like you're getting something out of it, and want to be a part of it in some way, you can give us $1 a month, $4 a month, $10 a month, $4,000 a month. We will use that money to pay our editors, to throw events, to pay for all of our expenses to host this podcast.
Yeah, you know, just kind of on that note, actually, just in the last week or two, you and I have been faced with a few decisions that involved money. Some listeners will notice that, like, you know, we've been doing a few more remote interviews because not everyone is Los Angeles based. And, like, there are a few decisions where I literally would say to you, like, hey, man, this is what the Patreon money is for. Let's go ahead and spend this to make the show better without it being a stress point for us. And so remote recordings, live events, a little bit more advertising to help grow the community a little bit more, all of that stuff is part of what Patreon is helping fund, in addition to making sure that Chris and Jay are taken care of. So basically what I'm saying is it may seem like a small amount of money, but it is actually making the show better and easier and growing it. And so thanks, guys.
Yeah, and for sure it is worth mentioning that we are also going to do another live show on December 5th at Sawhorse Productions in Studio City. We are going to have a lot more details. We're going to have some really fun guests. We're going to be with all the Sawhorse people who have actually hired some of our podcast listeners to edit and work there. They make a ton of commercials, music videos, TV shows. They edit, they produce, they shoot.
They've been guests on the show. We talk about them all the time.
Yeah, so please come. It's going to be December 5th. I think it's a Thursday night.
I think that's right, yeah.
There's going to be drinks and food and fun, and it's a great networking opportunity. So, yeah, we'll get more details out, but put it on your calendar, December 5th. Just shoot it, live show.
Hooray! Without any further ado, let's talk to Jemai.
So, Jemai, how's it going?
Hi, it's going well.
Yeah, how deep into film school are you now?
There's actually only about 4 weeks left of the semester.
Ooh, great. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like almost over.
Are you relieved that it's almost over?
Well, I mean, it's not actually over yet. So I just filmed this past weekend, my second film of the semester. So I guess I am a little relieved that that is done, but they're still editing.
And remind us, is there one more film to do after this in this semester or no?
Well, I'm not directing another film, but as part of my group, we have like one more group member who's filming next weekend.
Gotcha.
And the way it works out, I'm going to edit the next person's film.
Cool. So how do you feel having just wrapped your second film?
It's pretty crazy. I can't believe that I've actually made two films in such a short period of time. You know, even when I talk to my family, they're like, wait, what, you're filming again? And I've definitely learned a lot, like even more than I kind of thought I would learn just in one semester. So it's kind of cool to see my own kind of like personal progression.
That's awesome. Any takeaways that you can share with our audience?
Well, I've learned a lot about lighting and cinematography. And I think, you know, the program did a good job of kind of starting us off early on and throwing us onto sound stages, doing a bunch of things I've never done before. And yeah, and I've also, I mean, just because of time, we've had to put together projects and cast and like write scripts in a really, really short period of time. So like that's been interesting to see just how little time it can take to make a film.
Right. And do you feel like it's like all encompassing? Like, would you be able to sustain like a side job while you're doing this? Or is it pretty much a full-time job?
So I am a little unique in that I have a job and an internship right now. And that's like not recommended.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been surviving. Thankfully, like my internship is really flexible. So, you know, I don't have to go there many hours a week. And if I have to return some film equipment, they're like, okay, if I come in late, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I've been able to do all three, but I definitely would have recommended to maybe just do either the job or the internship.
Well, yeah. There's that old saying, you know, if you want something done, assign it to a busy person.
No, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think like you just when you're focused and you're just in tune with exactly what needs to get done, it's a lot easier to actually just kind of get it all done on a timeline and get it moving faster. Because, you know, I remember thinking in film school, like, boy, this was just like so hard, like so much hard work. Mm-hmm. And it was, but in terms of like just the number of hours you typically log in a career, it's not so gnarly. It's more like that incubation time is important. It's time to, you need time to reflect on what you've learned and think about it and process things and all that. The actual work of shooting, like over a weekend, it's like, you know, that's not that much compared to working on a TV show, for instance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And even like, you know, our films are still really short. Like the film that I just shot our script is only 3 pages long. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think, like, how do people shoot like 10 pages in a day? Like, what? How do they do this? So, yeah.
Right. Well, I'm curious, when you're making these film school films, are you still like kind of thinking about film festivals and your career and how this works into, or how this fits into your repertoire as a director? Or is it more like, I got an assignment and I'm going to do my best, the best job I can, and finish it and then move on? Like, I guess, how is this integrated into like building your own career as a director compared to just like exercise and learning?
You know, I think that everyone is coming at this, you know, in their own way. I definitely think, especially depending on what background you're already coming from, because, you know, a lot of people, this is their first time even working with an actor, for example. So I do think that some people are really using it to focus on maybe one aspect and use that as a learning experience. I guess I'm like the type of person where if I put in so much work into something, I just like, I want to be able to, you know, share it with people. So I've definitely, I would like really like to send my films off this film festival. I did a horror for my first one, and I feel like, you know, there's a ton of like niche film festivals that might, you know, work out in. And I just, you know, really tried to make something that, you know, I could be really proud of. And then also the actors, like the SAG actors that I'm working with, would also, you know, have something that they could be proud of. So, yeah, I've definitely been thinking about how each film that I make fits in with my, like, portfolio, as mm-hmm. you might say.
Remind me, are there any restrictions on the film? Is it full dialogue? Is it full color? Or are there kind of quirks to the program?
So the first film we made this semester, there was no dialogue, mm-hmm. which is a very unique, you know, thing that I've personally never done before. And then this film that we just did, there you could have dialogue. But besides that, there's not really restrictions. You know, people are doing documentaries. Some people are doing experimental films, and it's pretty free in that regard. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. How did your first film turn out? Like, are you happy with it?
Yeah, I made a horror film about a woman who has a recurring nightmare, and there's a demon in her nightmare. And then she uses lucid dreaming to, you know, kind of fight that and stop that nightmare. So I created like a creature, basically. And that's something that I've, you know, never done before. And that was really fun. And I feel like a lot of people, maybe me included, weren't exactly sure that how that was going to work out. But I think overall people are sufficiently freaked out. So that has been entertaining to watch.
When you made the creature, was it something that you did practically or digitally or a mixture? Oh, fun. Cool. Tell us a little more about that. Like, what were the materials that you used?
So basically what I did is I cast two actors to together make one creature, and I painted them black with, you know, body paint, and I attached like long fingernails to them. So the monster itself is pretty much just four arms, mm-hmm. but, you know, with the way that they look and then the way that we shot it, it kind of, you know, there's kind of a hint that there might be, you know, something more. And just the hands themselves were able to, you know, kind of be scary enough, which is what I was going for. And I'm like really glad it worked out. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a smart, clean solution, you know? Like, rather than getting stuck with like a puppet or like trying to do things digitally or
I don't know how to do visual effects, so I was like, well, we're just gonna cast people. So.
Yeah, great.
That's awesome. And so do you have any kind of tips that or things that you learned from shooting that of like how to make something scary?
You know, it's so interesting because I'm not a horror person per se, so I definitely went in and kind of just went with what might scare me, if that makes sense. So I felt like if I was sufficiently freaked out, then, you know, at least, you know, somebody else would be. And I feel like a lot of it came through in the editing, because the way I edited it, there was lots of, like, you know, jump cuts and things like that. And in the sound design, I added some, like, sound effects of tearing flesh and things like that. I feel like all of those elements together, like, heightened it from just, oh, this is, like, a cool, like, makeup thing to, like, oh, wait, what's happening? I'm kind of afraid.
Right. That's awesome. I feel like with that stuff, it's always hard to figure out how much to show versus how much to hide, and like how quickly to show the visuals. Because it's like if you show them for too long, it becomes like not scary. Mm-hmm. But if you show them for too short, it's like hard to process what you're even seeing.
Yeah. It's a real exercise in just clarity.
Yeah.
Learning how to communicate with the audience.
And like lighting them in silhouette is scary sometimes, but also.
Mm-hmm. I did some of that. Yeah.
You want to see stuff. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So what's your next short going to be?
So the next one, the one that I just filmed, is about an angel of death that is basically conflicted about killing somebody that she has tied up in the back of the trunk of her car. So again, it's very dark. And it's interesting because I was going for just like a fantasy type of thing, but, you know, just being on set and with the script, I feel like it might even be scarier than the first film that I did, you know, this semester. And this time we played with like some really cool makeup. We had her kind of like kind of tears of blood type of look for one thing. And like,
did you get the eyedroppers, like the blood eyedroppers?
So I have a classmate, and by the way, all of my classmates have hidden talents, which is amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
And she made red eyeshadow out of lipstick on set.
Cool.
And then I had some fake blood that I don't know how she somehow did something, and it looks really cool. This one is a lot about like lighting, and I'm purposefully mixing like different religious like iconography. So because I'm Muslim, and so there's some of that in there, but then there's also like Catholicism in there. So it's just like a really interesting like world building exercise that I did with this one. So we'll see how it turns out in the edit. So yeah.
That's awesome. And do you get to choose your own DP, or how does that work?
So we are actually signed. I'm not sure if this works the same in like every class in my cohort, but we were assigned into groups of three, where one person is your cinematographer and one person is your editor and like sound recordist. So 2 weeks ago, I filmed someone's film, and now she's going to edit this film. And the person who filmed my film is going to shoot next week, and I'm going to edit his film.
Oh, wow. So you were the DP on someone's project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the first time. I've never done that before.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it can get – does that get political? Like, because I'm assuming that some people come in with, like, having shot TV shows and other people.
Lauren, yes. She doesn't want to complain about classmates. So I will say – 100% without a doubt. Yes.
Yeah. But sometimes I feel like you probably discover new things. I mean, that's what film school is about, right? Obviously, right. You can discover that, oh, you might love actually cinematography more than directing, but you also might discover that this person, like you look at directors like Steve McQueen, you know, who's like a stage director, and how he shoots movies in kind of his own way that you've never seen before. And maybe you kind of get that when you're taking someone that's like a writer director and saying, hey, you're the DP on this thing. You know, you get or like that Boots Riley movie. I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it's like kind of crazy.
It is.
And people say that it's like a movie. It looks like a movie made by a person who like doesn't know the rules of filmmaking. And that's why it's so cool. You know, so I don't know. It seems exciting.
Yeah, we have so many like different people just within my small class alone that there's really not that much overlap in terms of the types of films that we make. Mm-hmm. So that has been really cool. Just like the film I shot is a film that like I probably like would not have ever made. So it was like really cool to work on that.
And, do you write all your own stuff?
In terms of school, I think for the most part, everyone has been writing their own stuff, but we're allowed to work with, you know, other people's scripts or co-writers or adapting materials. I've written with a co-writer in the past, and I would love to do that again. So we'll see how that happens. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, yeah. So I guess my final question, and Matt, you can obviously add on to this if you have something else, but a question that we just constantly get from our listeners is like, you know, should I spend my money on making a feature or should I spend my money on going to film school? And it sounds like you've already, in such a short time, made two shorts. You've learned a ton. Like, what's your, you still feel all in on like film school is the best way to go?
Well, I know that personally, I could not just go and make a feature film right now. Like, I felt like there was a lot of things that I still needed to learn. And I also know that I like, you know, learning in a school environment. Mm-hmm. And I've already made like a ton of really, really, really great friends in this short period of time. So I am definitely on the film school board right now.
Right. And you feel like those friends, like, is it becoming obvious to you how you're all going to help each other like beyond film school?
Yeah, it's clear how, kind of like you said, some people you can already tell that maybe they want to be a cinematographer, or just how like some people have hidden talents, like, or some people come from like music, for example. Like, I had a classmate who made music for my first film. So I just, there's all these different talents, and I think that there's a lot of like complementary characters here, you know what I mean? So,
awesome. I'm so jealous right now. I've been trying to make a short film for like 4 years. I just can't get my act together. I keep getting distracted by, you know,
gigs. Podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah, by podcast recording. No, but it's, you know, how cool is it that you're like, hey, here's a bunch of people and you guys have to make stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and there's a rhythm to it, which I like very much. So I want to ask, actually, do you know, after the semester, you'll have your two films and you'll have shot a couple and edited a couple. Mm-hmm. What is the next group of classes that you'll be taking? What's the next thing you tackle after break?
So next semester is the very famous 508 class here at USC, where we are assigned to be in a trio from the end of this semester. Mm-hmm. So three people split up into, you know, one person is producing and editing, or one person is directing, and one person is doing the cinematography and production design. And we rotate throughout the semester. So as a trio, we create three films next semester. So that is something where we don't, you know, get to choose who we work with. They're assigned, and it's a real exercise in collaboration. So that is really coming up on the horizon. I think we find out our trios next week. So that should be interesting.
Did you get to request people at all, or is it purely just...
It's like purely random. Mm-hmm. But there are so many great people. So, you know, I feel like there's very high chance of success, like, mm-hmm. as it is right now, at least. But there's just been horror stories that, you know, have been passed down throughout the generations.
Sure. I think that is kind of going back to Oren's question about like, oh, you know, are you thinking of this more as an exercise, or are you trying to craft a really great reel so when you, you know, enter the workforce, you have like your voice really crystal clear and you've been making nothing but, you know, things that all kind of match your own brand. Mm-hmm. I think that's being randomly paired with people kind of in a weird way takes the pressure off from trying to craft a brand or a reel this early on, because like inevitably there's going to be a cinematographer or a editor or somebody who's like still learning and like not exactly who they wouldn't be your first choice if this were a professional job. Mm-hmm. Right. And so don't worry about it. Make mistakes, figure things out, figure out what you like, and then, you know, make the really polished stuff, you know, in a year or two.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
I feel like that makes sense. The thesis film that I worked on, there were a few nights that were just complete disasters. The kind of stories that you, I'm sure, have heard about 508s, where it's just like things fall apart. And like we got like two shots in a single overnight shoot. That's not an exaggeration. Oh, that's literally what happened. At the end, I was like, hey, like this movie's not going to be that good no matter what. Like there's very few student films that are great. Mm-hmm. And so like the point is just make some mistakes, learn what you like, learn what you don't want to ever do again, and then...
And take risks, you know, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're worried about like, oh man, like I need to make a 30-second spot that like feels just like an AT&T ad, then you're probably not finding your voice in the same way that you should be, mm-hmm. you know?
For sure. And, you know, things have gotten really, like, you know, personal in terms of, like, our writing classes and our prompts and things like that. So I feel like in some ways they really are trying to make us, you know, kind of look within ourselves and, you know, find the stories you want to tell, all of that in a really real way, though. So that's been interesting and definitely something I probably wouldn't have done if I wasn't at film school.
Mm-hmm. Well, so exciting.
Yeah. That sounds really cool. Well, cool. Thanks for letting us hear what's going on. We're excited to check in with you again in a couple months and just kind of see how things progress.
Thank you.
Is there one final question? Is there anything you were surprised by? Anything that kind of shook up your expectations?
I feel like I've been surprised just like by myself. I came in, you know, kind of being a little nervous, like, oh, I don't know about cinematography and lighting, blah, blah, blah. But just during classes, I realized that all the time I spent watching YouTube videos and like reading articles, some of that has actually sunk in. So I feel like I'm learning or even just gaining more confidence in myself, you know, throughout film school so far. That's been great. So, yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful surprise.
Hopefully we get to see some of your shorts at some point.
Yeah, I might, you know, eventually put them up on my website. So I guess keep an eye on that.
And what's your website again?
So my website is jumaiyusuf.com. That's spelled JUMAIYUSUF.com.
Cool.
Yeah, and let us know when you post it. We can tweet it out. Let listeners check things out.
Cool. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, till next time, Jumai.
Okay.
Bite on.
Bye, Jumai.
Bite on.
Yeah, it was so awesome talking with Jumai. Let's hop into our conversation with Steve Vitolo.
So, hey, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for chatting with us. You are a listener of our podcast, which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, my marketing director and we were listening to a podcast and we heard the company that we, the company I created. We're like, oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome for us too, man. That's such a treat.
You are a writer and you own an app company?
Yes. I worked as a script coordinator for many years and gotten some freelance episodes on shows like Hot in Cleveland and Blackish. And I started Scriptation app, which is used by a bunch of it was used a bunch on Blackish, and it's used by film, TV shows, and anywhere from a production assistant to a cinematographer, writer, director, manager, agent, sort of all those people all across the board.
Awesome. And so let's start at the beginning for a second. So you were a script coordinator on which shows?
So many. I mean, they've been, oh God, I'd have to look at my IMDb, but I think my resume had like 20 plus shows that I'd worked on, because when you work in television, don't get too comfortable.
Are most of the rooms that you work in comedy?
Primarily. My first job was on Smallville, and I worked in the writer's office, so that's the only drama that I've worked on. But primarily everything else has been a comedy, and I really want to look at my IMDb because there are just so many. Oh, well, one of the first shows I worked on was Hannah Montana That was 10, oh gosh, how long ago was that now? 10 plus years, I think, at least 10 years ago. And that was my first writer's assistant job. I'm sorry, that wasn't a writer's assistant. That was my first writer's production assistant job. Big difference. Writer's assistant is you're in the room with the writers taking notes, working the script. Writer's production assistant, slightly different. You're getting coffee.
Right.
Getting the writer's lunches, making copies, distributing all that stuff.
You can move into being the writer's assistant.
Yeah, that's the goal. So that, and that's the only way I knew how to navigate this business and, you know, attempt to become a writer was to just work my way up. I mean, I started before Hannah Montana. I started as a production assistant on some award shows. I was working on the Academy Awards for a couple of years as a production assistant. Not as glamorous as it sounds. Show night was fantastic because I didn't have to do anything.
One night a year, it's incredibly
glamorous. It's really good. But also, when you when you're working on the Oscar, like it's like three. I started at the one year I started like right at the beginning. I was one of the first production assistants hired. And I think it was like 3 or 4 months of prep for this one night that's a little over three hours long. It's just so much work. And we were working at a Sony, and then we moved to the Kodak Theater for the last couple of weeks. And yeah, show night's great because I didn't really have to do anything. That was real tough work. And I had worked on a few different award type shows, live event shows, but I knew that I came out to Los Angeles to write, and I knew I needed to get into the writer's office somehow. And actually my first production assistant job on a scripted show was for The Middle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
But
oh, cool.
It was not for The Middle that you guys know with Patricia Heaton. It was actually developed 2 years before that. Instead of Patricia Heaton, it was Ricky Lake.
Oh,
yes.
Well, so let's jump into your script coordinator days. What is a script coordinator? What does a script coordinator do?
So a script coordinator on a comedy and a drama is basically the same with little differences. So a script coordinator on a comedy your primary job is to get the script in the right formatting shape. And you're basically like the one word or the one sentence job description is you're the liaison between the writer's office and the production office. So that means that you get the script in shape, you distribute the script, you deal with legal and clearance issues, you go to production meetings and tone meetings, and you're working with other departments, getting different things through legal and clearance. And it's your responsibility for everything that goes wrong in the scripts, which is cool. When you work in a comedy room, and I don't know why this is the case exactly, but comedy script coordinators have a lot of writer's assistant duties as well. So,
And is there a writer's assistant or is it just the script?
Hopefully. I know on some shows they just have a script coordinator, and that is rough. I worked on a show where there was a script coordinator, and he was begging and begging for a writer's assistant. And finally, halfway through the season, I came on as the writer's assistant to help him out. Because if you're a script coordinator on a show, and I was watching a major show, I forget what it was. It was on Netflix, and it said script coordinator / writer's assistant. And I'm like, oh my God. That person doing both jobs, that's rough. If you're doing that alone, then you're in the writers, you're taking notes, you're working in the script, and then you're also putting out the script and going to meetings and coordinating with other departments, and that's really, really tough.
Is it the type of job where you get paid overtime if you're working long hours?
Well, they're unionized now, which just happened less than a year ago, so it's slightly better. The pay isn't great. That wasn't what writers' assistants and script coordinators necessarily fought for, although they should have. But they did they did get overtime rates and things like that. Cause you know, I've never had this experience. I've fortunately worked with really nice people, and really great showrunners, but there are some people, especially on dramas, that will be waiting in their office script coordinators until like 2-3 in the morning. Yeah. Or on weekends, they'll get something like, okay, be on call. And then you'd do some work at like 2 or 3 o'clock or whatever for 2 hours, put out the script. And then the line producer on the show will be like, okay, well, you work 2 hours, so put down your 2 hours. But you're like, no, but like I have to be on call all day by my computer.
Yeah, I was like in the office. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like, you go in the office. So now there are some restrictions against that, thankfully. But yeah, it could be rough in terms of, and especially if you're on a first season show. I've been on first season multicam shows, and you get through with your run through at like 5 o'clock. You get network notes, and like then you're rewriting the entire script and have to put it out that night.
Right. And so on Black-ish, that's the show you're on right now, right?
Yeah. It was a show I was on for season 3 and season 4.
And you ended up writing the season finale of season 4?
Yeah. It just somehow happened that me and the writer's assistant, the showrunner, the creator of the show, and Kenya Barris and Corey Nickerson, who was running the room, had mentioned to me, and sometimes on shows you ask if you can write episodes. Black-ish is just such a big show that seemed presumptuous, and I wanted to really earn the script on that show. So me and the writer's assistant were just doing a good job pitching jokes, and then at some point during the season, they Corey Nickerson said, "Hey, we're thinking of giving you a script," and it somehow worked out that it was the final, just the way episodes were like falling to people. It turned out it was the season finale, and it also turned out that it was part of this major arc in the show where the two main characters are getting divorced, are separated, and are heading towards divorce. And we had the episode where they have to come back together. So it was challenging, and a lot of responsibility. And I think when they had told us that we were getting to write that episode, when they were getting into the arc, like, maybe we should let the professionals write this one. But yeah, I think we ended up doing a good job with it, and didn't go through that many rewrites. So that, you know, that's always good.
Hey. Well done. Well, you know, I want to take a quick deeper dive on that, just because I think that a lot of our listeners are going to be curious. And I have a vague understanding, but not as concrete a one as I would like. You mentioned earlier that, like, you would get some freelance episodes. So it's my understanding that, like, most network shows kind of have a few slots earmarked for people outside of the room. Is that right?
You know, I think that's how it's supposed to go. I think that's a writer's guild thing where a certain percentage of the show needs to be with a freelance writer. I'm not entirely sure. But sometimes, like, I've been on shows where they give it to the creators of the show, or the showrunners will give it to friends. And that'll be, like, the freelance episode.
But that person isn't really writing the episode.
Well, they are. Different writers' rooms work differently. I mean, some comedy rooms, you're group writing the show. So I've worked on some multi-camera shows where we've each written a scene. So we break, and this is true on pretty much every comedy I worked on. We break the show together. So everybody in the room will come up with the, you know, we'll bounce story ideas off each other and even do broad beats and kind of semi outlines together where we're working on a board. So that is in comedy writers' rooms, that's, you know, 90%+ how it works.
And wait, what do you mean when you say we're working on a board? Like someone is standing at a whiteboard with like a...
Yeah, marker? So a writer's assistant or maybe a lower level writer, or on some shows there was a co-executive producer that just liked the board and liked writing on the board. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it'll be any one of those people in the writer's room when we're breaking things out. So either we'll do like broad beats and say like cold open, this happens, and then act one, this happens, and then we list out the scenes. And then we'll do a deeper dive into that and really do an outline, like what turns into a maybe 7-page outline or so. Really do that on the board. So that's what we did on Blackish. It was really detailed notes.
And just to clarify then, so you're on the board, you're breaking things out, and then is there ever a process where like you're throwing it into a Word document and then projecting that up on the wall or on the TV through an Apple TV, or like you group writing it to that extent, or is the writer's assistant kind of taking that and then kind of turning it into an outline based off of the notes that were in the
room? So from my experience in comedies, and again, there's no like hard and fast rule. This is just, you know, based on the rooms sure. that I've worked on. You're working on the board. The writer's assistant is making those notes. And I'll give you kind of two examples. So on one show, we took those notes, sent it out to all the writers. And then on this particular show, each writer would go and write a scene or two. And then they would, in an outline. And they would email that to the writer's assistant. The writer's assistant would put it all together and email that whole outline back out to the writers. The writers would go through it, and then sometimes we would work on the outline in the room, but sometimes not. We would then go through it, and then we'd submit that to the studio and network, and then once that gets approved, then the same writers who wrote those outline scenes would write the script scene, and they would then, and it was usually done over a weekend, and then they would send their final draft files to the script coordinator, who would put it all together and then send out the script to everyone to read it. And then we would work on that in the room together. And that's what mm-hmm. happens most of the time, is you'll get, and so that on that show, that's a writer's draft, right? When everyone puts it together and then they read it and go through it. On other shows, what happens is you get on the board, you make all of your notes, and instead of giving it to all the writers, you give it to one writer, and they go through the same process. So they write their outline, they give it to the executive producers, the executive producers give their notes to the writer, that goes to the studio network, that writer then does a writer's draft, that comes into the room, the script coordinator sends out the writer's draft to all the writers, they read it, and now we're working on, and now we're back to that place that all shows are generally at, which is everyone reads the writer's draft, and then it's open in a final draft document in the writer's room, projected on a board, and we're all working on it together.
Right. So I think that the thing that's really helpful, that this whole process illustrates beyond just kind of understanding the inner workings of how different writer's rooms work, I think it really illustrates how if, you know, there are freelance opportunities for different from different shows, how the people who are in the room, right, the most junior people, the hungriest people, but also people who are in the room and aware of the DNA of the show and have been pitching things and contributing, like basically your writer's assistant, your script coordinator, sometimes even your writer's PA, those are the people who just makes the most sense for them to get those freelance episodes.
Well, hopefully. I mean, you have to... A couple of things have to go right. You know, one, you have to be talented. Well, sure. Hopefully. Two, you need to be on a show where that's the culture of the show, or work with a showrunner where that they do that. So I've worked with, and I'm not going to name names here, but I've worked with showrunners that just don't promote and don't give freelances to their assistants. Like mm-hmm. they just don't do it.
Right.
And I worked with on a couple of shows, I worked with a very nice, I mean, I really liked him as a person, but he just like doesn't give, and I had to learn that, you know, working with him. I was like, okay, what's this guy's like history here? And I've heard stories since then where writer's assistants had to threaten to quit, and then they finally got a freelance, and then he wouldn't staff them, so they left the show. You know, Blackish, when I was there, it's another reason why I didn't, you know, outwardly ask for a script, was because I knew that was in the culture of the show, that they do give freelances to their writer's assistants. And I just know that if I did a good job, then as an assistant, just obviously do your job. You know, that's the number one goal, do your job. But also, you know, help in a creative way. And, you know, any jokes I could pitch here or story ideas there or, you know, contribute, that'll help. So I was, you know, I didn't ask. I was just hoping that they would, you know, recognize that I was, you know, trying and, you know, I'd get an opportunity.
Yeah, it is funny how there's a lot of entry-level positions that are so hard and so rare that you get somebody who's incredible at them. I think about, like, PAs in particular. Like, you get a really, really great PA, it almost hurts to promote them because then you have to start from scratch with someone who doesn't know what they're doing. And it's the same with assistant. It's like, there's a lot of that culture in Hollywood and those jobs.
It's such a bummer. It's the boss, though. It really is. It's it's you have to do, you know, investigative work on your boss. And when you're first starting out, you're like, oh, okay, I'll take any job at any rate. Like, I just want to get in the room. And when you're starting, like, you want to break into a writer's room and, like, that's the holy grail. Like, I'm in. I've got my foot in the door. But once you worked on a couple of shows, and you can afford, and you're, you know, you could afford to pick and choose, then it's like, okay, well, what is the history of this show? What is the history of the showrunner that I'm working with? Are they good to their assistants? Do they promote? So that's when you have to start thinking about those things. And it's kind of like a beggars can be choosers sort of thing. But, you know, you got to respect yourself and you have to make moves that are good for your career. You can't just be being this assistant that's unappreciated and working, you know, your ass off until 2 a.m. and then have a guy that's never going to promote you. And then you're just wasting your time on this show. And the only thing you could hope in those situations is that, and this has happened to me, where the other writers on the show will then hire you when they get their own shows. And really that's kind of the silver lining on any of those scenarios. So if you're a writer's assistant stuck on a show right now that's like that, where your boss just ain't going to promote you, the other writers are noticing, and hopefully they will, and then you could jump ship and go with them.
Right. So you've been a script coordinator on over 20 shows. Let me know if this is too personal, but so do you have like an agent?
No. It's really just connections that I've made with other writers or even line producers. There's a line producer that I'm very close with. He came to my wedding, and I've worked with him like 7 times. So definitely when writers develop their own pilots, and you're doing a good job on the show that you were on, you're kind of like, unless they have their script coordinator already in mind and they've worked with them forever, you know, if you're the script coordinator on the last show that they've worked on as a writer and you're good, they'll be like, yeah, come and coordinate my pilot. So that's, and then hopefully that pilot goes to series and then you have your job for, you know, the next 6 months or so, or hopefully longer.
But what about getting staffed on a TV show? Isn't that something that usually happens through an agent? An agent shares your materials with
I haven't been showrunners. I mean, I've written, I thought when I wrote a freelance on a show, or even when I was a script coordinator on a big show, that I would sign with an agent or a manager. But it's a situation where, kind of like the chicken or the egg, where you've got to be staffed on a show to get an agent, but you can't be staffed on a show if you don't have an agent. So it's, did I say that right?
It's
at least in my case, and you know, I'm a white guy, so agents aren't exactly looking for me to get a staff job on a show. There just isn't room for people like me at a staff writer level. I mean, I know some of your listeners are going to say, "Oh, well, that's not true." Well, it is. It's just the truth. I mean,
Just in terms of like, if you're going to develop a new client,
right? Why take me?
Trying to get them
exactly.
Staffed.
Why take me? I mean, there's less at this point in breaking into a show. There are less opportunities for me, than there would be some other people, That's just the reality right now.
But wouldn't the answer to why take you is like, because he's worked on 20 TV shows?
Yeah, you'd think, but that doesn't really matter. It doesn't work like that right now.
Well, what's so fascinating to me about this is that I feel like you've got this perfect blueprint for how you become a software developer for this specific thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you were going to write a screenplay about a guy who came up with a piece of software to meticulously track all of the different changes in a creative field, who better than a person who literally has been doing it on 20 different TV shows and done all of the hard parts of it? You know what I mean? You've done all the manual labor of it and realized, like, oh, this is all something that you can do with computers now. So why not be the guy who figures out how to do it?
Yeah, I thought you were going, like, because you're on 20 different shows, because your shows keep getting canceled and you keep looking for a job, so you have to figure something else out. And
no,
I'll
this
tell
is
you
your
what,
aha moment.
Well, I'll tell you what, that was definitely part of it, because, I mean, I was working on a show called Do Not Disturb. Okay, it was my first writer's assistant job. It was in 2008. I live in Culver City. It's at Sony. I'm like, perfect. I'm going to get a bike. I'm going to go to work. This is going to be fantastic. I don't have to drive to the Valley. And we were canceled with it. It was the first show canceled that season. So we get the award. we aired 3 episodes and we were done. And I was there for like 2 months. I mean, it felt like forever. It was one of those shows where we were there till like 2 or 3 in the morning. And the showrunner was amazing. But like, he was just getting, like, everyone had an opinion on everything. And, man, it was rough. But, yeah, I mean, I've been on so many shows, and I was working on a pilot, and it was kind of a weird production schedule where we had a table read, and because of whatever, you know, I don't know why, maybe the actor's availability or something, we had 2 weeks between the table read and when we started shooting. And I had a boss who was doing a ton of rewrites on a script. Like, every single night, there was a full 50-page rewrite of a script. So that means that I was printing out the script, giving it to my production assistant, and they were making 100-plus copies, distributing it. And then the next morning, same exact thing. And everyone on the crew, all the notes that they made on that draft, they got a new draft, and they dumped the old draft. And it was just a huge waste of paper, but... and that's where I kind of started on this, like, and everyone in the production office was like, what are we doing? Like, every night we're going through like 5,000+ sheets of paper. But also, like, from the productivity side, it was insane. So it's like people on the crew were making all their notes and then like remaking their notes the next day. So that's kind of the, you know, the brainstorm where it's like, well, why, you know, we're writing scripts digitally and why aren't we reading scripts digitally? Okay, so we know you can make PDF annotations on a script. Like, PDF annotation has been around for, you know, 20, 30 years with Adobe. But now, like, you get the new script, and now what? How can you move your annotations from one draft to the next? And that was when I kind of was like, okay, like, if we can get this tech right, then we're in business. You know, then we kind of have a company. Mm-hmm. And that's how Scriptation started. It was, can we solve this problem of moving annotations in an intelligent way from one draft of a script to another draft of the script?
And that's basically, that's kind of it in a nutshell, right? Like, Scriptation, just to kind of clarify for everybody, it is an app that just tracks the changes in notes between different revisions on the script.
Yeah, so it tracks your notes. So, you know, use case like a director using them because they make a ton of notes. So they will get scripts very early. So in TV, they'll get maybe like a studio or a network draft, or they'll get like a pre-table draft or a tone meeting draft. So they're getting these scripts super early, and they, good directors at least, will do a lot of prep. So they'll take their script and they'll mark it up in all sorts of ways. And if they were using paper, they'd be using highlighters and pen, and they'd be making drawings. When they're using Scriptation, they're inserting photos and facing pages and making all sorts of markups. So they're doing this at a real early stage of the draft, and they're doing it on like 50, 60 page scripts. We've had directors send us scripts with 3 plus thousand annotations. So they are really thorough. So they're doing.
Do you, yeah, sorry to interrupt, but Matt, do you do that? Do you write a lot of notes on your scripts?
Yeah, I'm the exact use case where people are like, this dude is wasting so much paper. Because I'm a real tactile person. I like to like print things out. I like to highlight. I like to like doodle. I like to throw alts in. And especially on the longer form stuff, people would be like, do you really need this printed out again? And I would be like, well, yeah. And I would spend a lot of time transferring the notes. But I kind of, not to discredit scriptation at all, but I found something meditative about deciding whether or not I wanted to transfer the notes.
Right.
You know, when you got the old draft and then you got the new one and you're on page, you know, 65A or whatever, and you're kind of like, oh, do I need this person to say this alt? Or maybe I've come up with a better one, but that's just, you know, old right. fashioned.
I'm like the opposite. I'm so scared to lose any note I have. And I do, my first draft of my boards is always on the script. Like I just start drawing like what I think are mm-hmm. rectangles, but they're usually more like squares.
Sure, the little thumbnails, basically.
Yeah. I try to draw like 16x9 boxes, but they never, they're always weird.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but scriptation, like you can doodle and like attach those doodles to, like anchor them to different scenes and things like that.
Yeah, so if you wanted to make a drawing, you can, well, there are a couple things you could do. So I know a lot of directors will be on location and they'll take photos and they'll insert them into the script, either in a facing page, and we have a function for that where you can add facing pages. So you're a pen and paper person right now. We'll convert you, but you're a pen and paper person right now. So a lot of pen and paper people, one of the first major feature requests that we got was they were saying, okay, like love scriptation, but I need more room to write. So when I have my hard copy script and I turn the page over, I have a blank page on the back of it, right? So I can write all notes mm-hmm. on the facing page, and that way it just gives me more stuff to do. So that's one of the features that we added, was that you can add facing pages, and you could also insert diagrams or pictures as their own pages as well. Mm-hmm.
And you can also use the stylus to just draw your own like thumbnail sketches.
Yeah, the Apple Pencil was the most annoying thing and also the best thing for scriptation, because of course Apple releases a new thing and then right away everyone expects you to support it, and you would think that Apple makes it easy to support their devices, and but no. So that was, you know, there was some programming that needed to be done to support the Apple Pencil, but like palm rejection, things like that. Once we did that, it really became, that's kind of when scriptation started taking off, when people were like, okay, like now I can really mimic the pen and paper experience because it's like I'm writing on paper. I think, and I'm saying we're going to convert you, is because when, you know, if your work, and why we have a lot of TV people, we have, I would say, mostly people working in the television business, although we do have people on features and independent movies and some commercials and even Broadway. But especially in the TV business, because everything's so structured, right? You have all your prep, and then once you get into shooting, you're going 12-hour days, and you'll get some script revisions, and then you got to shoot the next day. And people, you know, I've had directors, you know, routinely tell me, like, it saves me 4 to 5 hours a week. And that's like 4 to 5 hours a week of the crap they don't want to do.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, that's the pitch that I make to some of the studio friends when they were talking about getting scriptation and making it available through the studio. I say, look, like these are 4 to 5 hours a week that they don't have to do the bullshit that they don't want to do. And they can actually focus on like making it good and not like dealing with the clerical work. And then maybe like that'll save you some time and things will look better and everyone will be happier. So that's, you know, a lot of the feedback we're getting and why it's been used so widely by TV directors and cinematographers and assistant directors.
That's cool. So what's your pitch for, like, let's say we have a listener that lives somewhere else, not LA, and is not in Hollywood, but has, you know, written their indie film script in final draft and they are ready to shoot it. Is scriptation something that's useful for them as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're not using the transferring notes feature, which maybe you're not. Maybe you're not getting a ton of drafts that you need to keep transferring notes back and forth, or I should say forth going forward. But it's just nice to have everything with you on your device. So whether you have an iPad or an iPhone, you can just have that with you. So let's say you've had like five versions of the script, but now you're set and it's not going to be changed. You can go back and have tabs of all the other versions on your scripts. Maybe you need to recall a joke, or this thing isn't working, or you want to see what you had before. It's just, you know, go digital. Like, why? Like, do you have even have a print? Who has a printer at home anymore? Sure. You know,
but it's still a heck of a lot easier than like taking a photo, printing it out, and then gluing it to your facing page or something.
Right.
Like
yeah. Gluing it to your page. I mean, we have people in the production office, on a show where they're, so we're writing it in Final Draft, and then we're, sending it to the printer, and then they're creating sides by taking the printed pages, X-ing the scenes that, I don't know, you know how sides are made, right? X-ing the scenes that you're not using, and then recopying. So not only are we printing and copying, but now we're recopying paper and distributing it. That is insane. It's 2018.
Yeah. And just for listeners that don't know what sides are, can you give us the quick explanation?
Yeah, so sides are the scenes that you're shooting for the day. So if you have, let's say, a 30-page script with 30 scenes, but you're shooting scene 1, 2, 5, 7, 15, you'll get those pages, just those pages. And if a scene is on half a page, so if you're shooting scene 2, but not 3, and 3 is like at the bottom half of the page, then you'll just put like an X in a Sharpie or hopefully in a computer program. And then for whatever reason, well, I guess for whatever reason, when you recopy these things, they're printed at like 60 or 70%. So you can fold it up and fit it in your pocket.
Yeah. Mini pages.
Yeah. But I have good news for people that do have sides on a show. We are releasing this new mode on our phone and iPad, but it's going to be on our phone. So it's called Reader Mode. Hopefully it's out by the time this podcast hits, I pray. It allows you, because when you're looking at a script on your phone as a PDF, try it now. Just try it. It's really hard to read. You have to like magnify everything. So what we're coming out with is called Reader Mode, and it will basically like Reader Mode in Safari, like if you ever use that function where you hit that thing at the top of the toolbar and it makes the text bigger. So that's what we have in scriptation, and we keep all the same formatting that you see in a movie script, but it's actually readable. So
Cool. I think John August's app Weekend Read does
it does yeah it does that. Something similar where you can actually read it on your phone. So we're gonna have that functionality as well. And the goal is so that people on set, because even if you're not marking up a script, you've got sides in your back pocket. People are looking at their sides and looking at their phones, right? Let's just keep everyone on their phone.
Now you can't tell if they're working.
It's
or
great
texting
for
their
yes,
friends.
Exactly. It's great for people working on shows. You can pretend like you're doing the work. I mean, come on.
So let me ask though about the sides thing. Is there an option to like put the scenes in the shooting order, for instance, like in the same way that you would get like your mini pages would be, you know, in order basically of like either what you were shooting, or they would like be in numerical order but like skipping over the scenes that you're not shooting that
so
day.
We have a sides mode that's separate from the reader mode I just talked about. We have sides mode in the app, and the cool thing about the sides mode in the app, and we've had it for a little while now, but what was really beneficial for me when I did my episode of Blackish and I was on set was that I was making my own sides with my notes on them. Because when you get sides from a production office, it's just
they're just right. Blank, so you just have to remember.
So now I had my sides with my notes on them, and it was like a total, I'm like, yeah, this is so obvious. Now I know exactly, like, okay, like I don't have to cross-reference between all these different scripts. I have everything right with me. So when reader mode comes out, I don't know, we're still trying to figure out how that sides feature is going to work within that reader mode. I imagine we can do it in order, but we're still talking about that. But that would, where basically you get into reader mode and then you select the scenes. So yeah, it would make sense to put that in order. So I'm sure we'll do that, but that's still a work in progress.
That's cool. So how much does it cost? Like, how can our, if our listeners want to mess around with this
thing? Well, we just went free, hopefully. If we're not free, we will be free soon. So you can download the app. You could transfer notes, and that will.
And it's called Scriptation in the Apple App Store.
Yeah, it's called Scriptation. You can get it on iOS. On if you get it for an iPad or an iPhone, you just have to get it once, and it'll be on both devices. So it's free to download. You can make all your annotations. You could transfer your notes between documents. There are some features that you have to pay for as part of an annual, or every 3 months you can pay for it. But yeah, we wanted to make it accessible to everyone without any sort of payment barrier. We wanted to give everybody annotation and note transferring tools because reader mode, because I mean, I don't know why we're using paper right now. I really don't.
Well, awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you one last question that's unrelated to Scriptation, but that I'm sure our listeners are dying to hear your thoughts on, which is, if you were like a new filmmaker, writer moving to LA today, and you wanted to write for TV, like what advice would you give those people?
If you're young, you probably don't have that much responsibility. Hopefully you have some money saved. Now is the time. So if you're moving out to LA and you're in your early 20s, it's different than being in your early 30s. You're going to have a lot more responsibility. So when you're young and can do it, just write as much as you can. Write a pilot and write another pilot. Write a spec, write a feature, just keep writing, keep getting better, find friends that you respect as writers or readers that can give you good notes. When you're trying to get feedback, don't send your script out to 20 people and get all these different notes and try and chase every one of them. Find a few people that you really respect, get notes from them, and then keep writing. And make connections, try and get jobs on show. I mean, it's easier said than done, but, work your way up. That's what I did. But I think, paramount to everything else, write a good script and try and get it in somebody's hands.
Cool.
Yeah. Great advice, man.
So you've listened to our podcast before.
Yes.
And so do you know, we do this segment called Unpaid Endorsements.
Oh yeah.
Unpaid Endorsements.
Cool. So, because it's unpaid, you can't endorse Scriptation. but Matt, do you have anything?
I do. I have like one that I'm very new to, pretty excited about. So I heard an interview with, a jazz musician named Kamasi Washington. He's like a LA guy.
Oh yeah.
Do you know Kamasi? I'm like,
I've
so
heard
late
his
to the
name for sure.
I'm so late to the game on this dude. He's a sax player who's like play it, basically if you've heard like sax on like any hip-hop track in the last 10 years, he's probably the guy playing it. But he's got these like his solo act is like a kind of psychedelic new wave of jazz that's like so awesome and like modern feeling without like ever feeling gimmicky. And I'm really into it and really excited about it. And I wish I played sax in high school pretty avidly, and I wish that there was somebody cool who wasn't born in 1945. You know what I mean? It's like this is like a young guy who's like super cool and sounds incredible and is like this incredibly gifted musician. So Kamasi Washington is the guy I'm like just kind of diving into right now. And also he is a avid Street Fighter 2 player, which is really funny to me.
That
like he's played competitively.
That's like still a thing. Like they have Street Fighter 2 tournaments.
Oh wow. Yeah. Yeah, Street Fighter 2 and Marvel vs. Capcom and a few other games that I'm maybe less familiar
Mortal
with.
Mortal Kombat?
Like, well, Mortal Kombat I don't think people play competitively. There's a few like older games that people still care about and are kind of the gold standard of fighting games that people will still play in real
Do you think anyone wins by just putting their elbow on the buttons and... Because that's my strategy whenever I play those games.
Yeah, I think...
Should I enter a tournament? Is that what you're suggesting?
I maybe if there isn't a buy-in and people seem nice, you could have some fun. Yeah, that's my endorsement. Kamasi Washington.
Cool.
Steve.
Yeah, you got
anything? Oh, I do. So my dad is really into coffee. Like, just... He has all of these coffee gadgets. So cool, naturally, dude. I decided to bother my mom and get my dad another gadget for coffee. Great. And it is the AeroPress. Not sure if you guys are aware of what this is, but it's like a whole thing.
I am not.
So it's similar to a French press, but it was created in California, I don't know, like 10 years ago or maybe a little bit less. It's a really simple way to brew a single cup of coffee. It's about $30. You can get it on Amazon. You basically pour your grinds in this little tube, and then you pour some water in, you mix it, and then you press it out, and cleanup is super easy. But the crazy... So I got it from my dad. My dad liked it that he got it back for me.
Wait, does it make cold brew or
hot? It's hot coffee.
Okay.
So... Yeah, it's very similar. I mean, it's similar to how you use a French press, right? Like, you pour your grinds in, you pour water in.
Like combine a French press and, like, a big syringe.
Yes.
Like a pastry syringe or something.
Yes, that you put... Yeah, and you push. So...
Filled with scalding coffee.
Filled with coffee.
What could go wrong?
But, like, the crazy thing about this is it's such, like, a simple little device. But there are AeroPress competitions... And there's all of these methods for brewing. So, like, they give you the traditional method on the box. That's, like, brew it this way with this temperature. And then you go on YouTube for AeroPress, and, like, everyone's using the inverted method and doing it with, like, this many grams of coffee for, like, on this temperature for this time. Like, this is how long you press it out. Like, it is a whole culture in itself. And now, like, every year there's a competition for who can brew the best AeroPress coffee. And I have to say... Like, I don't know if I'm going to do this every day, but it is, like, enjoyable. Like, it's an enjoyable way to make your coffee. So, AeroPress, that is my recommendation.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, man.
Matt and I love coffee.
Love coffee. I think to me, the big selling point is, like, it's pretty fast, and it's a single cup. So, if you're not brewing for a bunch of people, you just want your cup of coffee in the morning, and you've got hot water, you're drinking a cup of coffee pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm a Chemex guy, and Chemex, you know, it'll take 30 minutes before I'm really done brewing.
Yeah, I am. I'm like, I gotten into cold brew, like a cold brew concentrate, where you just put the grinds in a big French press and like let it steep overnight and then have your concentrate for the fridge. That's like a really easy cup of coffee every morning. But the AeroPress is nice just because it's like a little adventure every morning. Like an enjoyable thing, and cleanup is super easy. It's great. It's just great.
Steve, you're drinking the coffee of the future, and I salute you.
I still drink my Starbucks via instant coffees.
Hey, that's pretty good, though.
Take about 10 seconds to make, because we have like an instant hot water thing, which I've endorsed
before.
Yeah,
the Via is good. That is, you know, hey, it's better than Folgers.
Yeah.
It does the job, and it comes in little packets.
Yeah, in one cup real quick. Have you guys been to Phil's Coffee too?
With a Z?
Yeah.
Yes. P-H-I-Z. I haven't had coffee from Phil's. I probably had like some sort of latte situation.
They do single brews. I don't actually even think they have espresso. They might. I could be wrong, but
it's really good. But that's not the reason to go to Phil's.
What's the reason they go to Phil's? Yeah. They have like...
Just the coffee.
Oh, I did it wrong. I did it totally wrong.
It's kind of like you went to like... you know, a fancy ice cream place and ordered a slice of cake.
Yeah. You got a Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, you messed up, Steve. You messed up.
Yeah.
In the next draft of your life.
Oh, man.
Remember to bring the note over. So I don't really have an endorsement, but I have like a weird observation from today. Today is November 6th, which is funny because our previous episode we recorded yesterday on November 5th, the day before the election. Today is the day of the election. And I talked in the last episode about how I just directed these commercials for Keebler crackers. And I want to put them on Facebook, but I was like, of course I'm not going to post anything on Facebook today. It's election day. People are just much more interested in the election than some little commercial I posted.
Only post a selfie with your I voted sticker.
Right.
Everything else seems kind of
it's Stranger Things Day. I don't know if you saw that. It's the 20th or 35th anniversary of the disappearance of Will Byers or something like that.
I did see that Netflix had some Stranger Things stuff, but the observation I made is that because it's election day, there's so many people just like hanging out on Facebook today, just like waiting to read what's going on, like in their office jobs and just like refreshing the page, that it's not a great day to like post something big and new that you want to show people.
Right.
But it's a good day to like skate off of all this like kind of this chaotic attention. So I posted just a picture, or we'd posted a picture from the podcast that we took from a different interview, and I had just made some reference to the election and how people should, you know, I don't care who you vote for, but I vote that you should listen to our next podcast or something super dumb that barely made any sense. But off of that post, got like a ton of likes on it, which normally I wouldn't. And I think it's just because I posted it today where there's just a lot of people like hanging out on Facebook. So my observation is, even though it's not a great day to promote big things, it's a good day to promote little things whenever there's a big event going on. If it's like the Super Bowl or the Oscars or Election Day or something, New Year's Eve, you know, it's a good day where people are paying attention to the world to just kind of make a little statement.
The art of piggybacking onto a hashtag. That is the art of social media, Instagram especially.
Exactly. Well, cool. Well, if we want to find out more about you, Steve, do you have a website?
You can go to scriptation.com and look at all the stuff we've got there. We've got a blog. You can chat with us on there too if you have any questions about the app. You can look at my IMDb to see the stuff I did.
Cool. And your last name is Vitolo.
Yes.
Well, awesome. Well, if you want to find out more about this podcast and things we endorse and Scriptation and all that stuff, you can check out our website at justshootitpod.com. We are on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at justshootitpod. I am at Smitey Pyleg.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Christopher Robert Gray. Our producer is Madeline Rosewatt. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams. The music you are listening to right now is by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.
Leave us an iTunes review if you can. Thank you, and we will talk to you later.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.